hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight, griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and falling down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country. And you're walking on the right beside me. I read about some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They live on milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the real life, I'm fighting in the far and dive deep. If you don't love it, leave it. Singing be warned. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in the fighting side of me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of the program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, that's more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, every week on Tuesday, I'm involved in a radio, or actually a podcast, with the host, Bill Johnson of the American Freedom Party, and Ken Givadin from Indiana, who's our kind of our chief, organizer and producer, and usually some other guest. it's called The Ethno State. And we discuss a number of issues each time that would be of interest to our people. And I'm really proud of the show. I think we've done, we're doing very well, and we're gathering quite a bit of a following. So this is this week's edition of The Ethno State. This one's just with Bill Johnson, Ken Givadin, and myself. And among other things, we look at why it is that blacks, or at least many blacks, seem to hate whites. And Bill Johnson's excellent answer to the busybodies of the Southern Poverty Law Center, who really are a major problem, constantly meddling, defaming people, and so on. This is The Ethno State.
Hello, everyone. This is William Johnson, chairman of the American Freedom Party, here with another edition of The Ethno State. Today it's just going to be me, William Johnson, and Ken Gividen. Last time we met, I told you, Ken, that I had just been interviewed by USA Today, the fellow by the name of Chris Woodyard, and he called me up on the phone, and he said, "Hey, Mr. Johnson, there's a group out there. I'm not sure if you heard of them or not. It's called the Southern Poverty Law Center, and Southern Poverty Legal Center." He didn't get the name right, so he was a real novice. He says, "But they've listed you as a hate group. So what are your comments?" So I leaned back in my chair and I pontificated and I blew smoke and I just was kind of tongue in cheek, made some comments. But then it turns out that indeed they published it, and the USA Today paper about a week ago was called Hate Group Count Hits 20-Year High Amid Rise in White Supremacy, report says. And the report is the Southern Poverty Law Center. And it's an article that, you know, is just kind of typical. It quotes a lot of the blather coming from the Southern Poverty Law Center, blaming all these people for being neo-Nazis and hate groups. And they went on to say, and they quoted me. I'm about the only one, I think, that was on the group, that was on the list that was quoted. There was another person that was another group, I think it was a Catholic group that was quoted. But she says that there is no shortage of hate-filled alternatives, and this is alternatives to the traditional hate groups, whether they are neo-Nazis, racist skinheads, or others who direct their anger at immigrants, lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender individuals, Muslims, or others. Black nationalist groups, often described as anti-Semitic, hostile to lesbians, gays, and transgender people, and anti-whites, have picked up steam. They have been driven by events such as the outcry around the NFL players taking a knee during the playing of the national anthem. These groups can be very, very fringe, and they don't produce the violence that the white supremacy does, Eirich said. What? They're saying that the white groups are more violent than the black groups? What's your take on that, Ken?
My take on that is this. We tend to believe what we hear before we believe what we see. I have observed this for years. You tell somebody something and they'll believe it. Well, you can show them something differently. And we are inclined to believe whatever we hear. The leftists understand this. The Marxists understand this. And so they bombard our brains with sensory input that is primarily audio but visual as well. But it works. I mean, the Bible even tells us that faith comes by hearing. We tend to believe what we hear. Now, I've had people, Bill, who have attacked me with gossip and slander. Everybody has as part of living. But what amazes me about that is that people who hear that stuff will believe it, even though they know me. Some of them don't know me. I had a, do you need to interject something?
No, go on.
No, I heard you inhale. I thought you were about to say something. But, I've done business with psychopaths before, and these guys, they try to do you in by gaslighting, you know, spreading hateful things about you. Sometimes people that I've known for years, and you know better, sometimes they're people I've never met, just maybe a clerk in a store, but they heard something, so they believe it. So, that's why they do this, because what we hear, we tend to believe. And it's really hard to get that out of your brain, you know, once you develop that belief system.
Well, I can tell you that it is a lot safer for a black man or an Asian or a Hispanic to come to a white nationalist group than to have a white man saunter into a black nationalist organization or operation. There's no comparison. The whites are much more peaceful and open and abiding than the other groups, and the black nationalist groups. Case in point, I told you this story before, but many years ago, I toured the country with a black nationalist by the name of Robert Brock. He was a black, back to Africa black. And we would go around and speak at various groups and do radio shows and television shows. This was before the internet. And I took him one time, or a couple of times on one of our trips, to some white nationalist meetings. And there were a lot of hardcore white nationalists there of various stripes. And he was the only black person, the only person of color in the whole group. And every single speaker in that group that spoke tailored their comments to say nice and uplifting things about his particular group, about blacks who are racially conscious and are supportive. And so it was a very supportive speech for him in particular. And then one time he took me to a black nationalist group in Oakland, and we were picked up in this old beat up Volkswagen that had the various African colors and spears on the back and on bumper stickers. And I got in the back of the car, in the back of this Volkswagen Bug, and this black guy that was taking us to this black nationalist meeting, he said, "Brother Brock, what do you have this white devil in there for? We should take him down the river. We should kill him. We should kill him." You know, and I go, ha, 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 ha. And Robert Brock turned around and says, "You better be quiet, Mr. Johnson. Just sit here and listen." So I sat there, and the whole way, he talked about how he wanted to kill white people, kill the white women, kill the white children. And they took me into this group, and I sat in the back, and there were about 30 or 40 black people there. And the whole time, they talked about how they should kill me, kill all my family, kill all my relatives. I was thinking, I shouldn't be here in this group. But the contrast was dramatic. We were so loving and embracing when the black man was in white nationalist groups. But when I went to the black nationalist group, I was literally fearful of my life. I got out of there, as you can see, but I learned that what Heidi Byrick of the Southern Poverty Law Center is saying is a bunch of hooey.
Somebody in the chat group had a question. By the way, we got a good little crowd on the chat group tonight. But one of them had a question. I think it was directed to you, and that is, and I assume that because you've talked about this before, but he wondered, why is it when white people see each other when they're out and about, they don't talk to each other? I mean, other people groups, it's like there's a natural affinity. A couple black guys, you know, hey, what's happening? You know, or East Asians, but white people, not so much. Wonder why.
I've noticed that it's changing, though, because, you know, for most of my life, or more than half my life, we were the vastly dominant people in this country. We were 90% of this country when I was a child. And so, of course, Eric, you say hi to everybody because it's your people. And when you go out to play, you'd play with your kids on your block. Nowadays, nobody knows their neighbor. You know, you can't even speak the same language as your neighbor. No kids play in the cul-de-sac. They all play video games inside, and you don't have the community spirit that you had when I was a child. And that carries over when you're in the grocery store and you see another white person, you ignore them, but that's changing because now we're getting to be in such a minority that I have noticed that when I'm in a store that's predominantly non-white and there's another white person there, occasionally you'll cross eyes and you'll smile and you'll nod. And with the knowledge of, yeah, you know, we're foreigners in our own country. We're visitors here. You know, how you doing? So it's changing. And unfortunately, it's changing because our milieu has changed so much that we are indeed visitors in our own land.
I tell you what I think about this. I'm trying to work and think and talk at the same time. That's difficult to do. Paul Fromm's going to come on in just a second. But my opinion is this. I think white people are, by nature, individualist. I think we like to be alone. I mean, we don't mind socializing, but by and large, we're just individualist. You know, and I noticed that in high school. I went to a black high school, and I noticed the black kids would move around the campus in these massive groups. It was really bizarre. But I've seen that elsewhere. I see it everywhere, you know. And they just do it. But white kids would walk around in groups of one, two, or three. So it's kind of amazing. Now, when I was in China a few years ago, 2007, I think I was there, for 2.5 weeks doing kind of mission-type work. And very rarely would you see a white person. I think I saw one outside of our group. But, you know, there was no affinity. There was no, hey, how you doing? Oh, look, through, you know, because when I was there, people would turn around and stare at you because you're the only white guy in the city. I mean, this was the city size of Chicago, up in the desert area up north. And I saw this white guy, and I did the same thing. I turned around and stared at him. You know, what's he doing here? But the point of all that is, I think that's just the innate nature of white people.
I think you might be right. Now, if you take, for example, in the feline world, you have mountain lions. They're very individual, solo. They don't hunt in groups. You have cats are a little bit more social, but they're often individual. Bobcats, a lot of pumas, tigers, they are all lone wolves. They work by themselves. But if you take a look at lions, there's always a pride of lions. They hang around in a group. So you could say that they're both of the feline family, but lions group together and mountain lions go solo. So I think that's probably true for a lot of our different racial groups within this world. But before we move out of this topic, I want to quote another portion of this USA Today story about the Southern Poverty Law Center. And this is what they quoted me. And then we can analyze, you know, in the long run, I would have said things differently, but this is what they said. They said, at least one of the outfits added to the SPLC list didn't seem to mind. A leader of the American Freedom Party, a New York-based group, that says on its website that the core European American population is being overwhelmed by tens of millions of legal and illegal immigrants, was pleased. Quote, I am flattered, close quote, William Johnson, chairman of the American Freedom Party, told USA Today. It really helps elevate our reputation when the party is lumped with the groups close to the mainstream supporting Trump and those linked to Catholicism. He says that the list is so broad that it becomes meaningless. Quote, I don't know of any organization that says, I'm a hate group. Our group, we're a love group, Johnson says. And he said that the American Freedom Party has nationalists of many stripes and races among its members. And, quote, white people are becoming comfortable with being proud of their heritage. That was the very last sentence of the entire article. So it's good that, you know, they quoted us at the very end. If people read all the way through, then maybe it's like you say and what the Bible says, people are going to believe what they hear, what they read, and maybe they'll come around. But then you look at the comments, and there was like 196 comments on there. And the comments were ranging. A lot of them said, oh, the SPLC, that's a hate group if I ever heard of one. And but then others will say, oh, did you put your MAGA hat next to your Klan robe? You know, and so there's all sorts of people. And they say, like, MAGA is the most divisive slogan in modern times with many dark undertones. And then, so people are going back and forth where they're just ragging other people. And every time a white person sticks up for white people, then somebody says, this is from Amit Gupta. Matthew Lamb, have you ever experienced racism? You know, I've experienced racism because I'm brown and I'm married to a white woman. And they just go on. You know, everybody wants to just be the victim, if in everywhere you go. So in any event, at least we're getting the message out a little bit. So that's basically all I wanted to say on that USA Today story.
Somebody commented on Paul Fromm's Canadian flag. Tell us about that real quick. You've done this before, but they were kind of curious.
Oh, yes. Well, this is the old red ensign. It was the flag of Canada from Confederation in 1867 up to 1965. It actually, because they didn't, in a sense, repeal it. It still is a valid flag for Canada, but that's an obscure legal issue. It's one that most nationalists, white nationalists in Canada, adopt because it's so meaningful. It really shows us as a European Christian country. You can see the cross in the Union Jack. You see the crest may be a little bit obscure, but in there are the symbols of England, Ireland, Scotland, and France, our basic original European founding sets of people. The three green maple leaves at the bottom of the crest, that they're variously explained as standing for the native people, the original founding of European people, and then those European people who came afterwards. all the stems all united as one. It, you know, it's a very vibrant and meaningful symbol. I'm just touching the surface.
Is it used? Is it still used today anywhere?
Oh, the white almost all white nationalist meetings in Canada fly this.
But is it used by any government? Has it ever been repealed? Is it still out there? Or,
yeah, they actually didn't repeal it. They inserted the present red maple leaf on a white background with two bars flag in 1965. And I floated an idea that I think is correct. They replaced the flag in 65. They massively changed our immigration law in Canada, as in the United States in 65. And they began this process that would eventually, 6 years later, give us this anti-free speech, so-called hate law. I think all of these are connected, because I don't think the immigration changes, at least those that organized them from the top, were accidental. This was the beginning of the replacement of the European family settler people in Canada, as was the Emanuel Seller Hart Act in the United States. This was a plan. Now, at first, there wasn't a lot of happening, and changes were relatively slow for the first 10 or 15 years. But you know, if you're going to change a country, if you're going to change the demography of a country, that flag behind me is a living reproach. I mean, it's saying, no, we're not diversity. We are European and, you know, Christian, you know. As much as we may tolerate others, we're a Christian country. Well, that's not the message the present cultural Marxist elite want to send out there.
Well, you know, there's a whole lot of culture and heritage in our Western cultures that have never been changed, that just kind of passed out of, I guess, currency. Like, I remember reading that Neil Armstrong, who landed on the moon, he went to Scotland and to a little town where they had a law that was never repealed. It says that you're supposed to hang any Armstrong in the town. Like there was a fight between the clans, and the Armstrongs were on the wrong side of it. So he went in there, and they ceremoniously put like a noose around his neck, but then they didn't do it. But okay, apparently in that town, that law is still on their books.
And so survived space travel, but ended up being hanged
in a town of Scotland. But then another interesting thing is that there is actually a well-known organization. It's called the Society in Dedham for the Apprehending of Horse Thieves. And it's the oldest continually existing horse thief apprehending organization in the United States. And it's still active. They get together every year. They've got together for centuries. And it turns out that Ronald Reagan was a member, Richard Nixon was a member, John F. Kennedy was a member. So all these people have joined this organization to stop horse thieves. So and actually, you can join. It costs you $10, and you can join. They have to have it approved by the board of directors. They do it like around Christmas time. So if any of you guys want to join the Dedham Anti-Horse Thieving Society in Massachusetts, look it up and send your application in. And you'll be with some august people. But, okay, in any event, let's get down to business. We have some interesting articles to talk about. The very first one shows what is going on in the United Kingdom today, and it's just typical of what we see in every Western country, but particularly in the United Kingdom and America. So, Ken, what's this article all about?
This is about the fact that 13% of Britons are not white, but 6.6% of police officers are not white. And that is considered social injustice, and they're going to have to tweak things. They're trying to bring up that number. The way they're accomplishing it is through something we would call it?
Affirmative action.
Affirmative action. They're calling it positive action. But it's the same thing. So forget law and order. Forget the most qualified person who is applying to be a police officer. But you got to hire people based on ethnicity or sexual orientation. that's not good for us being the public. It's just not good at all, but it's also eminently unfair to a highly qualified police officer, potential police officer, prospective officer, who doesn't get hired. But the standards are... Go ahead.
How did we come around so that every white country in the world embraces the same self-destructive concept? How did that develop? Can you tell me?
You're asking me.
How about Paul?
Yeah,
well,
Paul.
I can tell you where to look. I can't show you the blueprint. There would be academic literature that precedes this stuff by 10 or 15 years. Check it out. These ideas are floated in academe, and then they filter down to the politicians. You know, there's a word that got highlighted last week in testimony in the Canadian Problem and Justice Committee by what somebody who's called the Clerk of the Privy Council. English political terminology. But basically, that's the chief civil servant and close advisor to the Prime Minister. Anyway, this clerk was testifying on a different matter, but just suddenly blurted out that he was very worried about this country and the what he called the vomitorium of the social media and the extreme statements, people being called traitors and treason. He didn't say who was saying these things, but I can tell you it had something to do with a big anti-carbon tax protest and also anti-immigration protest organized by the Yellow Vest. So he didn't reference them by name, but some of their signs did talk about our immigration policy being treason. I think that those words are important and they fit. When I saw the Ken's article and I saw the picture of that, of the chief of Scotland Yard, good looking white woman, who is putting the knife into our own people. It isn't some black guy, it wasn't some East Indian, it was a fellow white person who wants to cheat white men and white women, particularly straight white men and straight white women, of the opportunity to serve in the police force in order to get those numbers up there of the sexually weird East Indians, blacks, Chinese, Hottentots from darkest Africa. This is treason. These are people who are betraying our own people. I don't think it's over the top to use that word. I mean, I don't like overselling a case, but I think sometimes maybe words like that actually fit.
Okay, let's take a look at what, just off the top of my head, what other countries have done with similar situations. Let's take a look at what the Japanese did regarding the Ainu. The Ainu were a native group of people before the Japanese came in. They pushed them to the far north of Hokkaido and ignored them, and then let them be just kind of dwindle out and die out. And I think just recently, I think I read just earlier this month, that they're finally giving them recognition of minority status. And then take a look at in the Philippines, for example. You have a group of people called the Negritos, which are very short, dark, black people, kind of like, I think probably similar to what the Australian Aborigines are, or some of the North Central islands off of India, wherever those were.
But they're very little. They're like
they're called Negritos, little black people. Yeah. And what they did to them, they just got rid of them. take a look at what happens in China near the border with Central Asia. All of the Muslims there, they passed a law saying, okay, all you Muslims, you have to drink alcohol all the time. You have to eat pork, and they're going to be putting them into concentration camps
and re-education camps. Yeah, you know, we bend over backwards for people. I would agree that the way the Chinese are treating these the Uyghurs is bad and so on. But we sacrifice ourselves to uplift minorities, and that is what I think is so wrong. We're, or at least our rotten leadership is doing this to us. I noticed that the chief superintendent of Scotland Yard does not say, you know, I feel just so bad being a female and a white taking the job that really ought to belong to somebody else. I will propose a gay guy with a turban. No, they don't give up their own job. They give up your job.
Well, let's take a look at this. Take another example, the Middle East, for example, where they're the same race, but one is a member of the Shiite Muslim and the other is a Sunni. And when they come together, the people in power, if you're a member of the one not in power, you know, they'll dispatch you forthwith. So there's certainly a different outlook. And, you know, I think that the Western outlook is certainly more embracing, but it's destructive in today's small world. So maybe we're going to have to start changing our attitude now.
You know that basket case in East Africa called Somalia? We Canada took a fair number of Somalis after the during the Civil War in the early 90s, and because they're not properly selected, because they come from gun and gang culture, I mean gun and drug culture, many of them aren't fitting in very well. So we've got what are called immigrant settlement programs, which are funded by the federal government. They run into the cost of billions of dollars a year. Well, apparently, if you can't just have a Somali heading up one of these to deal with the Somali community. He has to be of the right clan, because if he's not in the right clan, other Somalis of different clans will not deal with him. You think, what the heck are these people doing in Canada? And I think you get the same picture in and around Minneapolis.
Well, if you take a look at government jobs, for example, I notice more and more police chiefs. They're all people of color. And more and more doctors, they're all people of color. So they started out coming in with these lower level jobs, and now they're pushing white people out of everywhere. And they're the ones that are having the children, and we're not having the children. So, you know, we have to start having racial consciousness again. But in any event, that's what we're dealing with. But the people make a lot of fun on the right wing about this gal, I forget her name, from New York, this congressman from New York, Cortez or something like that.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Yeah, she just came out and says, hey, we got to start having so many babies. And already the white people aren't having babies, so it doesn't apply to us. But I think that was really, I really kind of liked her to say that, you know. We got to save the environment, we got to stop having so many babies. So if she starts preaching that, I'm going to kind of like her, in spite of all her... all of the bad things you said. That was one good thing of talking to her group of people. Of course, our people, everyone listening there, you go get married and have a bunch of kids. But the other people, they got to cut back.
Got a trivia question for you guys. What currency do they use in Sweden?
The kroner.
The kroner or the euro or probably they use the real. What do they use in Iran? The drachma. I don't know. What is it?
Well, the reason I ask is somebody from Sweden just donated 250 of them to my
Kronen?
Kronen. SEC, yeah. So it might be Zimbabwe money, as far as I know.
I think it's worth a bit more than the Zimbabwe.
Yeah,
$1 million. That's pretty good. Tell the guy thank you.
Yeah, that's Peter Griffin, not his real name, but his online name is Peter Griffin, and thanks, we can take all the cash.
Yeah,
good for Peter Griffin. Now tell him to have seven children. Trump accused of violating black woman with a peck on the cheek. You know, I heard that headline, but I didn't even read it, because I saw her picture, and I thought, I don't want to even read that story.
Yeah, this is kind of dumb, but he was at a campaign stop 2016. A black woman who was working with his campaign, by her own admission, she was looking for a little bump in her business enterprise. She's entrepreneurial, which I guess is a good thing. But as Trump got off the bus, he did what politicians do. He greets people. So he gave her a little kiss on the cheek. Well, according to her, he tried to kiss her in the mouth in front of everybody. I just don't believe that, but she said, oh, she had to turn her head away. She was so disgusted. Well, now it's turned into a lawsuit, and since we have a lawyer here, you might want to advise us, Bill. Is this going to go anywhere?
What's she suing for? She's suing for a battery? You say this happened when?
2016, yeah.
Okay, well then, at least, I don't know what state it's in, but battery statutes are 1 year, statute of limitations. So, I don't know what it is. I don't know what she's suing for. She's suing for coverage is what she's suing, but I think that's silly. First of all, I wouldn't think, I don't know. I'm so hands off. I don't even like to shake hands with people. I'd rather, bow to people, but I certainly don't hug me.
Yeah, I have learned to do a fist bump when you meet somebody.
Yeah, I've never done that. That's a little bit too juvenile for me, but I know people have tried to do that. I kind of mostly like to just, I guess shake hands. I guess I don't know. But in any event, I don't think that's going to go anywhere, and I don't think I want to go anywhere farther with it either. So the next
publicity stunt.
Pardon me?
It's a publicity stunt.
Yeah, it's a publicity stunt. She's trying to get
15 seconds of fame.
I think she's trying to get media buzz out of it because she is an entrepreneur and she understands there's tremendous value getting millions and millions and millions of dollars worth in free publicity. Nobody heard of this woman. Bam.
I guess me was a not as nice term as entrepreneur. I'd call it just a hustler.
Yeah. Okay, let's go on to the next one. What Americans really think about race? Well, what's an American? What do Americans, whatever that is, think about race, Ken?
This is an article that I came across in a website called 538.com, which I guess is a fairly notable website. I've heard of it too, but I don't even know how I found this. I just kind of surfed the internet and I saw it somewhere. But whoever wrote this article wanted to write an article about race and what Americans thought about it. And so to put together the article, the author, I don't even know who it is, surveyed, took a look at polls that have been taken recently, and here are a couple of the things that he found. The overwhelming majority of Americans oppose reparations for blacks. I don't know about that. I mean, if we give black people countless billions of dollars, they're just going to spend it, put it back in the economy, be kind of like a Keynesian thing, FDR did. But they also oppose the abolition of ICE by a significant margin. Most Americans oppose the removal of Confederate icons, and a slight majority believe America should be self-perceived as a nation comprised of Western European descendants. So that is still it. Now, the thing that came to mind when I was reading these things, and there's a lot more than just those, but they're surveying everybody. If they just surveyed white people, I wonder if they would get the same results. Probably depends where. If they surveyed white people in Washington State or New England, probably get about the same. But if you interview people in the Midwest, Flyover Country, the Deep South, probably white people, by and large, these numbers, I think, reflect on white people's opinions.
Well, I don't know. I just think that we can no longer, the term American no longer has the meaning that it has when I was growing up and well into my adult years. America now is just everybody in the entire world that's just living here, and it's really demoralizing. But I think that even the white people, if you talk to them in front of a group and you ask them, well, what do you think should America be characterized as a white Western country, they'd all say no, because they're so embarrassed or ashamed of promoting their own people. If you had if you're a group of white people and just off the street and you said, well, what do you think of immigration? They'd all say, legal immigration is fine. That's really the best. So, they're all afraid. They're timid. They're not like the three of us here willing to speak up for what the truth is.
Well, you got to keep in mind, Bill, one of the things that you point out constantly is when you read these comments underneath articles where people are, you don't know who they are. They're hiding behind an icon. They're a little more honest, and I think we're seeing white people are a little more outspoken than what they would be if
they're I find those numbers actually reasonably encouraging. I would imagine the poll was taken, there'd be anonymity. You wouldn't have to sit down and actually face another human being and say to their face, give your answers. I imagine that's probably it was done online or on questions, questionnaires that were blind questionnaires. Those that values are relatively good. I would imagine that first of one or two of those questions you cited, even many blacks would agree. For instance, that America is basically a European Christian country. But it would be interesting to separate out just the whites
Right, not only separate them out, but in the context on how those questions were elicited, the answers were elicited, because that is the main reason why the pollsters were so wrong about the Trump election, is because they talked to people on the phone, and people on the phone were saying, oh, I'm not going to support Donald Trump, and they went out and they voted for it. So you may be an enemy on the internet gets maybe a more truthful answer than even on the phone, but I think that still influences white people.
There were 55 major national polls during the election. All but six of them got it wrong. All six of them were predicting Hillary Clinton would be elected. And I understand that one of the ones that did have it right, I believe, was the Los Angeles Times poll. And what they did was they tracked the same people from, I guess sometime in the late spring, right through election day, rather than just random phone calls. And they built themselves what they felt was a statistically relevant and balanced group. And then they tracked the people. And there was a certain degree of trust, and people were able to confide as their opinions changed. Whereas the methodology of the other polls, and that's the best thing that could be said. I think some of those polls simply generated the answers the people who paid for the water, which was the biggest hope was Trump was going to lose, and this was, I think, discourage a lot of his voters that said, oh, what's the point? He's going to lose anyway.
I think I remember that the Los Angeles Times did get it right. And if I also remember, they apologized for getting it right because they were all racist. I think they had to explain away how they got it right, and they didn't want to be perceived as supporting Trump. So.
Okay, there's a question for Bill. If we're not Americans, what are we?
We are our ethnic group.
Called, the reason I asked that is, the Tom, I can't pronounce his last name, that was with us last week, he has this movement to start a white nation, an ethno-state, which is the name of the show. So if we're going to start an ethno-state, or you guys are, what are you going to call it? Albion? And if we're citizens of Albion, are we, what do you call those? Albionist, or?
Yeah.
Albicons?
I don't know. I haven't gotten so far as what we're going to name the country yet, but we'll get there, and it's got to be restrictive. We've got to exclude those that are interracially married. We've got to have people, they just can't identify as white, just like Senator Warren, who identified as Indian. You got to actually have the white blood to be there and not be mixed race.
Yeah, that's one of those stories on the agenda, by the way.
Oh, is it? Yeah, okay. All right. Well, let's go to another article. Let's talk about fake Indian tribe offers Elizabeth Warren membership. Yeah, let's talk about that.
Fake for fake. Well, when I was reading this story, I was actually thinking I want to hear what Bill Johnson has to say about this, because effectively, here's another entrepreneur. And he decided to start an Indian tribe. The criteria is you have to have Indian ancestry. So Elizabeth Warren would qualify, even if it's 1/1024th Indian, she qualifies. Well, what this guy's doing, I think, is he's just starting an affinity group and probably has some way to make money off of it. I don't know.
But he wants to set up a casino eventually.
Yeah, well, maybe. I mean, seriously, that could be his idea. I can't read people's minds. I don't know what he's thinking, but it's possible. But the point of that is, this guy just set up an ethnic group. He set up a little ethno state. Why can't we do that? Do we have to be Indiansville, or can white people say, hey, we're going to set up Albion or whatever, just like a tribe?
Maybe we can. About 8 or 9 years ago, I got contacted by the chief of an Indian tribe, and he claimed that he was had a tribe and it was recognized by the federal government. So I went to meet him in Orange County, and he was a surfer dude with bleached blonde hair with a necklace around his thing, and he looked about as Indian. He looked about as Indian as Senator Warren. He pulled out all these forms, how he was recognized by this and that, and so I was thinking, hey, you know, if you're really a recognized tribe, recognized by the government, well, the Swedish Nobel Committee will take nominations for the Nobel Peace Prize from any legitimate government, and that's why Donald Trump's people had Prime Minister Abe recommend Donald Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize. I don't know if you read that in an article, but I said to him years ago, I said, okay, well, if you're an actual Indian tribe, why don't you nominate me for the Nobel Peace Prize and send it out to Sweden? We talked back and forth, and he actually went forward to try to put something together, but it wasn't a legitimate tribe represented, you know, like the Navajo tribe would be, where they have a measure of independence. He was just a guy doing exactly what this group was doing. And there's a lot of snake oil salesmen out there, and that guy was one of them, and that other tribe is one of them, and Senator Warren is one too.
Now, you got a meeting coming up. When is it? March the 8th. We're going to discuss kind of a roundtable discussion, brainstorming. Why not interject this? Why don't we just form a nation? You know, you don't have to have geography. Just a nation, the qualification is going to be white.
Okay, that's certainly a start, you know, then we might all be, what is that guy's name, the man without a country that we all read when we were in high school? Was it Matthew Brady or something like that? Okay. Where Matthew Nolan, he gave up his country because he was so mad, so he didn't go anywhere, and he regretted it. So if we set up a new country, and we might have some people regret that if the American government says, well, okay, you know, you're no longer, you've given up your American citizenship, and by the way, Johnson, you're going to have the U.S. exit tax, so give us 28% of your income and 20% of your assets. This is if you sold them. So I think that maybe we have to be measured and careful about trying to set up another country.
You know, in defining a tribe or whatever, I think it's not just blood. Yes, that's important, but a history together. That's one of the reasons your surfer dude friend, whether this was for real or just a joke, that's just not viable. What people that he was trying to organize, well, what did they have in common? What history did they have together? And the same with this guy who's organizing the tribe that Pocahontas is going to be a member of. What have they had? What experiences or history have they had in common? Well, none at all.
But also the recognized Indian tribes and reservations here have a lot of autonomy and power. They have their own laws, and in fact, like in Arizona, if you want to practice Indian law, you got to take the bar. You got to pass questions on Indian law, and so they do have legitimate, independent autonomy and authority that this guy, these two groups we talked about, won't have, or our little group that sets forth.
But with the advent of DNA testing so readily available and really not that expensive, it would be fairly easy to identify who white people are. So I think there may be an idea. The only thing that I don't like about it is what you just said. They're going to take, what, 27% of your assets. But can't you belong to Albion or whatever you call the nation and be a citizen of the United States at the same time?
You know, I don't know what the ramifications would be. It would not be an actual organization, country with rights. It would be another snake oil bottle that we're trying to sell, just like these guys. So I think the time is not right for that, but it's something we could consider. If we could take over an area, a jurisdiction, I think I mentioned this fact before, if we should start with Haiti. We should take Haiti back for your fridge ancestors, Ken. Then, you know, we could build from there, but we're not there yet.
I'm not sure we needed geography. I mean, the Jews went for what, nearly 2,000 years without a homeland? But they were
okay, I'll bring it up. That's certainly a start.
All right.
Okay. Let's go to the last one. Is a brutal killer about to go free? What's that all about?
Well, this is another story that made me think of you, because this is in your jurisdiction, the state of California. San Bernardino, years ago, man, this was back in 1983. I'm doing math in my head. What was that? 36 years ago?
Okay.
This black guy broke out of prison, and according to, well, he was trying to be convicted of murdering a white family. He killed the mother with a hatchet, ice pick, massacred these people, husband, wife, attacked her two little children. One of them had his throat slit, but still managed to survive. And there was a little neighbor boy, I guess a girl, whatever, was visiting the family that night, and she died as well. So he broke into this home, just broke out of prison, massacred these people. A DNA test confirmed he's got it, did it. But now he's trying to get out. Governor Brown wouldn't play games with him. But the new governor of California, can't remember his name off the top of my head. But, Newsom, he's going along with it. So here's what PJ Media said. San Bernardino County District Attorney Mike Ramos argued that DNA testing on items including the bloody T-shirt and discarded cigarettes had already put Cooper, that's the guy's name, at the scene, and in their family's stolen station wagon. The defense asserts that Cooper's blood was planted on the T-shirt in order to blame or frame a black man for the crime. So, it goes on to say, California Governor Gavin Newsom today ordered new evidence testing at the request of a 61-year-old death row inmate, that's Cooper, in the gruesome 83 murders at Chino Hills, California.
Well, this underscores a bigger issue, is the concept of justice delayed is justice denied. This person should not have been incarcerated for 36 years. He should have been summarily executed, just like those school shooters. The school shooters, the trial should have taken place the following day, and he should have been convicted, and that afternoon, a rope thrown over a tree, and he should be hanged. These guys should not be allowed to live to file an appeal.
But what do you do if and there's a lot of guys who are wrongfully convicted, and they are vindicated because of DNA testing. I mean, there's, what, I think like 100-some in the country now.
Yeah.
We're on that road.
I read recently about some sort of dog owner who trained his dog to smell out convicts, and that pseudoscience was used in a number of cases to convict people. And he got up there and says, yeah, my dog never makes a mistake. He smelled out this guy, and they convicted him, and he was totally innocent. And then they went through relook all this stuff, and everyone that dog sniffed out. It was just, you know, it was just hit or miss. So you have a good point there that there is a miscarriage of justice. So you have to weigh the miscarriages. But what is more miscarriage, having a murderer like this Cooper man stay, and you get, what is it, three meals in a cot, what is it called, three hots in a cot, as opposed to putting him out of his, killing him, and executing some sort of innocent people. My take on this is that you err on the side of putting these Cooper people out of the way, until one of my family members gets arrested inappropriately. Then I'll switch sides very quickly. So that's my sunshine soldier opinion.
Well, I think the part of the, I agree with much of what Bill says, but the entire judicial process has to be speeded up. I agree about justice delay being justice denied. Endless appeals and the fact that it takes so long to get anything to court means that years and years go by. That killing back those killings in 1983, that's 36 years ago. There's probably hardly anybody who remembers them. I thought there was an instructive story that occurred in Canada just before Confederation. So we're talking about maybe 1865. A fellow goes into a bar and for some reason or other shoots and kills another man. He runs away, but he's apprehended a few days later. That was in July. His trial is in September. He's convicted. He appeals. The appeal is heard in October. He loses. At the end of October, he's hanged. So there's only a few months different between the perpetrator, when the deed was perpetrated, when the trial occurred, the appeal was heard, he was denied, and this was resolved. Nowadays, even in states that still have capital punishment, he'd be on death row for years and years and years and years and years. Nothing really gets resolved, and meanwhile, as Ken was saying, the taxpayer is shoveling out a lot of money, and he might well even in jail in Killing.
Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on LightResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern Time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of these are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf, forever.
In days of yore, from Britain shore, would the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever.